and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, OTG's Corey Waldron and Matt Chin. What's up, fellas?
Yo, what's going on, guys? Happy to be here. Excited to talk a little Raptors basketball.
We can't even go a full pod. We're going to have to mention Drake at least twice throughout this podcast. Right?
Yeah, no, I sent him an email to see if he wanted to do the pod, but I didn't get a response.
Well, loser.
I know. Come on. But, you know, talking about the North, the Raptors, we're in the top 10 now. Raptors are coming in at number 9. Before we talk about that ranking, let's talk about the team from last season. You know, another 50-win season, but another disappointing playoffs. What are your thoughts on the Raptors from last year?
Yeah, I'll go first. Another 50-win season, like you said, second one in franchise history. The Raptors 6th in offensive rating, 11th in defensive rating in the regular season. So definitely one of the hardest outs in the Eastern Conference. I thought Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan just had fantastic years. You know, per usual, I thought, you know, the Raptors were one of the toughest teams to scheme against in the regular season. But as you mentioned, Nick, really tough playoff run for them once again. After going all in at the trade deadline, they were 14th out of 16 teams in offensive efficiency in the playoffs, and that's kind of been the story with Toronto and how they finished their seasons the last couple of years.
They're a joke when it comes to playoff time. I mean, if you want to be realistic here, I mean, this is a team, like you said, Nick, start off every year in the playoffs. We expect high things from, you know, to be the biggest threat to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And it seems every year they come up short. You know, whether it's between Kyle Lowry always being hurt or DeMar DeRozan struggling as much as they do in the regular season. And we know that DeRozan makes a lot of his points from the free throw line. You know, and getting Serge Ibaka last year, P.J. Tucker. You know, they brought in a lot of guys. You know, there was a lot of talk around the trade deadline that, you know, this Raptors team was the biggest threat to the Cavs in the East. And, you know, when it came down, you know, put the money where your mouth is, they just weren't.
Yeah, you mentioned it. You know, they brought in Serge Ibaka, P.J. Tucker. They kind of went in all in for the playoffs. You know, the Cavs look a little bit weaker last year. You know, the defense wasn't looking great, so maybe the Raptors thought they could take a swing at it. But Lowry was hurt in the playoffs, and that's kind of been a theme for them. It feels like going into the playoffs, they're never fully healthy. Obviously, they have struggles, but to top that with a Kyle Lowry injury, it's like they have no chance. You know, even against the Bucks in the first round, it wasn't necessarily smooth sailing, and then they got swept by Cavs in round two. What do you think the major issue is for the Raptors in the playoff? Do you think it's their style of basketball? Do you think it's DeRozan and Lowry just choking, or do you think it's just bad luck with injuries?
I think it comes down to a lot of scheme for me. The Raptors are a team I think that's really difficult to scheme for in the regular season because they have such good isolation players in their backcourt, but you put them in a seven-game series and Lowry and DeRozan only have so much creativity before it's a lot easier to kind of plan and scheme for them. You know, in the playoffs, I think they try to get a little bit more creative, but the most that Dwayne Casey really does is, you know, give one guy an opportunity to play pick and run or pick and roll, then the next guy gets an opportunity to run pick and roll. And that's just not going to cut it, especially when you don't have the floor spacing, the ball movement that some of these top tier echelon teams have.
You know, I had a weird stat brought up. It was the playoffs per game. The playoffs per game, DeMar DeRozan last year averaged 22.4 points per game. If you look at that per 36 minutes, he averaged less points per game, which I just find funny. but, you know, he's just – you know, DeRozan for me is just very ineffective in the playoffs because, you know, Matt, like you mentioned, you know, the game plans change. And I think because so many people know that the focal point of the Raptors is obviously around Kyle Lowry and DeRozan – you know, and when Lowry's, you know, like you mentioned, Nick, and I'm mentioning it again, you know, he's constantly hurt. It's easier to focus all your attention on DeMar DeRozan, who is, at this point in time, the best player on the Toronto Raptors, in my opinion. I think he's not head and shoulders better than Kyle Lowry, but he can just do more than Kyle Lowry can do at this point in his career.
Let's talk highlight of the Raptor season. What was the biggest highlight for you last year for this team?
From a player perspective, DeMar DeRozan, coming off of an Olympic gold medal, he just had a fantastic offensive output season. I mean, defensively, he's still a bit of a question mark on that end of the floor, but offensively, just absolutely spectacular. Scored 30 points in the first five games in the season, first player since Michael Jordan to do that. He did that in 1987. DeRozan at 27 points a game, just over 35 minutes per game. I thought he was absolutely fantastic, excluding the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm rolling with Matt as well with DeRozan. I think DeRozan stood out in almost every category. Obviously, he had his best season yet in the NBA, raising his points per game from 23 to 27. I mean, to start off the year, that guy was on an absolute tear, too, if I recall correctly. He came out of the gates on fire. I think at one point he was the highest scorer in the league for a couple weeks. Season cooled down and playoffs came around, and the same old Raptors showed their head.
Yeah, I think DeRozan's kind of the easy choice here, like you guys mentioned. Like Matt said, the first five games scoring over 30 points, first guy to do it since MJ. Obviously, if you do that, that's a big deal. You know, he had to carry this team at points, too, because Lowry was dealing with injury once again. And DeRozan was kind of that constant guy. Obviously, in the playoffs, it was rough. But, you know, regular season-wise, he made a lot of improvements, and he constantly improved his game. So this year, you know, there's been talk about him maybe adding a three-point shot, doing a little bit more pick-and-roll ball handling. So another interesting season for him. But let's talk disappointment.
Can I add one more other weird kind of out of the box highlight here? So this one actually happened after the season. I thought the fact that Masai Ujiri, their GM, not ditching them to go to New York was a really significant development that wasn't spoken of. The Knicks, after they fired Phil, were hot on the tails for Ujiri, who's done such a great job in Toronto. And I think, you know, if that same offer happened, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, any GM in the league would jump at the opportunity to run the Knicks, a team that's in the mecca of basketball, will pay high into the luxury tax. So I think it's a testament to how far Toronto has come as a franchise. They're finally, you know, kind of a franchise that's on the map now. And I think keeping Masai Ujiri and, you know, allowing him to continue the development north of the border is a really, really big deal for them.
The culture in Toronto within the last probably, you know, 3 to 5 years, you know, since they went to this, you know, DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, you know, being the face of the franchise, since Drake has been the ambassador of the Raptors. I mean, the culture in Toronto is real. I mean, they've built a winning culture. I mean, obviously it hasn't translated to titles or extremely deep playoff runs, but, you know, that's a part of what, you know, the GM has done and everything else. They've really built a successful team to this point in time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the culture has really changed. Even the fan base has gotten better. And, you know, Toronto's becoming one of the harder places to play in the NBA. So you got to give him a lot of props. And like you said, Matt, losing him would have been a big hamper to this culture and this organization. So keeping him is a big deal, especially when a team, like you said, the Knicks, you know, they're not as hot as they used to be, but they still have some pop being in New York, MSG. It's still a big deal. But let's talk disappointment. Biggest disappointment for the Raptors last year.
Yeah, we touched on it a little bit, just not being able to translate the same success in the playoffs. This has been something that's been an ongoing issue for Toronto the last couple of years. And it just gets added on to when you take into consideration that they went all in at the trade deadline. I really loved the addition of PJ Tucker and Serge Ibaka, for that matter. I mean, I feel differently about Ibaka's contract, but adding him at the deadline, I thought those were great additions for Toronto. And just, you know, after, you know, taking the Cavs to a pretty good fight in the playoffs the year before, just not being able to translate it this year was a huge disappointment for them.
Yeah, I'm not gonna pick out the disappointment of them being failing in the playoffs. I'm gonna pick Valanciunas. I mean, this was a guy who we saw getting slightly better last year. You know, he was becoming more of an offensive threat for them, and last year, you know, there was just no improvement. He almost played himself out of the rotation pretty much in the playoffs because of how bad he is on defense. You know, he was only playing 22 minutes per game in the playoffs. And, you know, that's your starting center who you're paying money to be there on the floor. And he just hasn't been able to produce like we thought he would, or at least I thought he would. Because this is a guy who's
I just don't think he's playable. Gifted.
No, he isn't. At this point in his career, he's not. He's too slow.
Yeah, and in a playoff series, it's just too easy to get him in a switch with a pick-and-roll ball handler. And then once you get him on an island, he's toast. So, I mean, guys like that, him, Enes Kanter, you can't play those guys in the playoffs anymore.
Oh, they're flat-footed.
Yeah. Exactly, and, you know, I think you both made great picks. You know, the injuries obviously suck for the Raptors. It seems like every year somebody's banged up, especially Lowry. And then, like you said, Valanciunas, he didn't really take another step in his game. His minutes were down. His points were down a little bit. It's like – you know, you expect him to be better, especially when Lowry's out and they really needed him. And then playing with other good players should have helped him, but he kind of just regressed, you know what I mean? So it's kind of there's been talk, I think, this summer that the Raptors were trying to move him and they weren't even able to unload the contract just because no one has interest in a player like that. Like you mentioned, Matt, you know, some of these bigs that can only score on offense and can't defend a pick and roll aren't really playable.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could throw him out there sometimes, like against like small lineups where the center isn't someone who's like much of a facilitator. Then you can have Valanciunas on the glass just abusing people. You know, like I know that they used Valanciunas a lot against like Kelly Olynyk last year. And when you have those kinds of matchups where you have a weak defense or a weak rebounding team, then you can like deploy Valanciunas in some, you know, 5 or 6 minute spurts to grab you a couple boards and really close down the paint. But overall, I think players like him are just becoming more obsolete in the league.
Exactly, especially in a 7-game series. In the regular season, like you said, you can kind of find them some more minutes, but in the playoffs, it's a lot harder, especially when they're scheming it against them. But let's talk about this rank. You know, the Raptors being the first team inside our top 10 at number 9. What are your thoughts on them? Too high, too low, fair?
It's pretty fair to me. I had them in front of the Bucks anyway, who was one ranking behind on our podcast or on our author rankings. So overall, to me, it's a fair ranking. I think, you know, eventually they will take a step back from where they were last year, but I still consider them to be a top 4 seed overall in the East.
Yeah, I agree. It's fair. They're right on this cusp between, you know, 11, 10, and 9. 9 is fair, especially coming off, you know, a 51-win season. You know, this is a team that every year is in the top part of the East. And with the East getting worse, they're not going to move much.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, they've kind of earned the respect to be in that top 10 until proven otherwise. And the East, like we mentioned on a lot of these pods, is going to be pretty bad this year. And the Raptors will be one team that have some good players and they can take advantage of those easy wins. But let's talk additions. Draft-wise, they drafted OG Anunoby. You know, this guy's going to bring a lot of perimeter defense, some real toughness. Offensively, he needs to add to his game. But what do you guys like about him for Toronto?
Yeah, Anunoby, and he's not practicing right now in training camp because he's still recovering from a knee injury. But I thought where they got him in the later part of the first round was a good pick for them. They really needed some versatility on the wing. And Anunoby was one of my favorite kind of switchable, versatile wing products coming out of college. You know, he has a good willingness to defend, get his nose dirty. He has a 7'6" wingspan, good NBA-ready body. You know, he can put the ball on the floor a little bit and finish. He's still pretty raw offensively, but overall, he's just an incredible athlete, good rebounder. I think he has the makings to be a really solid 3-and-D role player.
OG. I like this kid a lot. I mean, obviously, you know, he played at IU, Indiana University, which is close to me since I'm from Indiana. You know, like you said, Matt, though, you pretty much hit, you know, you're spot on. He's going to be a solid 3-and-D guy. I'm not sure where he'll develop in terms of being a role player or a starter. The one issue with the, you know, Toronto Raptors these last, you know, 3 to 5 years has been their lack of a small forward. No offense to new net, Damari Carroll. But, you know, they've been lacking in that three spot. So they definitely need someone. Obviously, they got CJ Miles to talk about, and they have Norman Powell coming up who's, you know, shown glimpses of being something very good. But, you know, OG, you know, depending on how he comes back from the knee injury, depending on how he fits in, how many minutes he can get on a team that's, you know, competing in the East, you know, he could definitely have a nice career out, you know, up north in Toronto.
Yeah, the Raptors quietly have done a pretty good job grabbing some young guys with a little bit of upside, even though they've been a good team, which is kind of smart, and it kind of gives them a little bit more potential moving forward with their bench. You know, it's a risk always playing young guys, but it could work out, especially if he comes back healthy. Like you said, Matt, you know, the injury, it kind of gave him a chance to grab a guy a little bit later in the draft than they would have, you know, necessarily.
Just the one thing that kind of scares me off from Anunoby, and I really do love him. He was, you know, toward the top of my rankings in terms of, you know, people who had translatable NBA games. You know, he's marketed as a 3-and-D player, but he shot 56% from the free throw line in college. And I don't know if you guys adhere to the whole theory of free throw percentage translating to developing a good three-point percentage in the NBA. I know there's a fair number of NBA writers and analysts who do adhere to that, but if that's the case, then he Anunoby has a really long way to go shooting from distance.
You know, that definitely does have an impact, but I also believe with the way the NBA is going and, you know, all the types of coaches and analytics they have, you know, they'll be able to determine if he can end up being able to shoot or if it's kind of a waste of time. I think the Raptors are kind of willing to bet on him. They probably saw something that they like. And even if, you know, maybe he's only a defensive type player, he can always be a bench guy because you always need one of those dudes to get lock somebody down on the perimeter. But you mentioned it earlier, guys, you know, they re-signed Serge Ibaka and Kyle Lowry. You know, both these guys were brought back. The Raptors are taking another swing at it. We don't necessarily think they're a championship team, but what are your thoughts on bringing back these two and competing for another top seed in the East?
Yeah, I mean, they're just they're kind of running it back here with the same core that they've been rolling with. And it was a lot of money for Ibaka. I thought Lowry played admirably in a tough point guard market. He did well to do $100 million over 3 years. The thing I do like about the combination of the contracts is that they're both three-year deals, so they run out at the same time. So if Toronto wants to keep rolling it back with this same core the next couple of years and they realize that it's not going to work out, they can go in a different direction at the same time with Lowry and Ibaka. I preferred the Patrick Patterson contract, and we'll get to that in the departure section, to the Ibaka contract. But overall, I don't think there's anything wrong with Toronto running back the same core that they've had coming off 250-win seasons. There's, you know, absolutely nothing wrong with getting back to the second round, maybe an Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, they don't have the ceiling of a finals team, but it's still really exciting to have a 50-win-plus team to root for on a nightly basis.
I'm so on the fence about this. Realistically, it's the smart thing to do. Because if you lose Serge Ibaka, if you lose Kyle Lowry, if you don't pay these two guys, what is your team? You know, you're in the bottom half of the East, fighting for an eighth seed with how bad the East is. You obviously had to pay those two. I'm not, you know, like you said, Matt, it is, you know, they're three-year deals. So it's not like this is going to hurt them long-term. And by the time these guys, you know, Lowry will be 34, Ibaka will be 31. So when the contracts run out, you know, they're getting rid of those guys, you know, while they're on that decline. I just hate the fact that they're going to be paying, you know, Lowry $33 million his final year, Ibaka $23 million, DeRozan $27 million, Valanciunas $17 million. It's a lot of cap locked up between four guys, and who knows how much of a beating Lowry would have taken by that final year of that contract. You know, what will Valanciunas be in another 3 years? Same thing with Ibaka. I mean, you had to bring it back for the short term. I'm just worried about the end of these guys', you know, contracts.
Yeah, the Raptors were stuck in like a tough spot. You know, if they didn't re-sign these guys, like you said, Corey, they'd kind of be a mediocre type team. And, you know, they're not going to compete. They're not going to get a high pick, so they're not really going to get much better. They're not bad enough to tank, and they're not good enough to win a championship. Like you said, Matt, maybe they get lucky, another Eastern Conference Finals appearance. You know, that's not bad. And, you know, another 50-win season would not be a bad thing either. It's kind of just establishing the winning culture in Toronto. You know, just constantly winning does help the franchise. So I think the Raptors ultimately made a good decision. I think, you know, going forward, we could see expiring contracts have a little bit more value with the cap kind of getting stagnant in the future. So maybe moving a Lowry at the end of his deal or Serge Ibaka might work out for them and kind of open up some space and allow them to grab somebody.
If someone wants to take a $33 million, 34-year-old Kyle Lowry, God bless him.
Well, on an expiring deal, like think about a situation like the Lakers where you're looking to get a max free agent the following year, but you need contracts off the books. You know, that's something you might think about. You know, you wouldn't be a move to win for that season, but it'd be a move to win in the offseason.
It's just so much money just to even have on the books. Like you said, if it's an expiring deal, it doesn't hurt anyone, obviously.
And the side effects of having those two massive deals is that it really cut into re-signing some of the role players. Without getting too much into it, the Patrick Pattersons, the PJ Tucker, Corey Joseph, letting go of Damari Carroll. I mean, you know, using all of that cap space on Ibaka and Lowry had those residual effects of losing those guys. So, it, you know, logistically, it means that the younger players at the end of the bench, your Norman Powell, Pascal Siakam, Bebe Nogera, you know, those are guys that are going to have significantly more minutes. And it's to be seen whether or not they're going to be able to handle all those bulk minutes on a team that's still trying to compete for an Eastern Conference championship.
definitely a lot on the young guys, but let's talk about the one move they did make in terms of trading. You know, they picked up CJ Miles from the Pacers. They sent over Corey Joseph. What are your thoughts on CJ Miles? You know, he's going to provide them some nice three-point shooting.
Yeah, as I pointed out before, I thought their biggest void for them in the playoffs was their floor spacing, and CJ Miles is certainly someone who's a three-point specialist, can light it up from any sort of distance. He fits pretty seamlessly in any scheme. He's not a huge usage rate guy, so his off-ball game will be really heavily utilized. I mean, I like the deal. I like the fit. My biggest question with him is he's 6'6", but he's not super strong or super athletic. I prefer him guarding twos, and I think with Lowry and DeRozan, they'll probably want him guarding threes, which is a job that's probably better suited for Norman Powell because he has that extra length and that extra athleticism that Miles doesn't have. So it'll be an interesting battle between Powell and Miles throughout the season to see who takes the full-time small forward job.
Man, I love CJ Miles. I mean, obviously coming from the Pacers, I've watched him play a lot the last 3 years. You know, I saw him throw out a couple stats. His usage rate last year tied his career low in 18.4, but he had his career high in shooting percentage. He had his career high in three-point percentage. And his second highest ever field goal percentage. I mean, you know, that's really good. You know, we saw usage drop by almost 2 points, and he still remained 4 points, and he still remained a consistent, accurate shooter. The only bad thing about CJ Miles is he is very streaky. You know, there can be a stretch of like 7 games where CJ Miles will hit, you know, 3 to 5 threes in a game. And then there'll be another stretch within, you know, right after that hot streak where for 10 games, this guy can't hit the broad side of a barn. You know, that's the only bad thing about getting him. But, you know, when you have Damari Carroll, who for, you know, all intents and purposes was a train wreck his time in Toronto, you know, he never really regained the knee strength or whatever. He just didn't look good on the floor. CJ Miles would definitely add, like you said, Matt, spacing, which he lacked in the playoffs. And I'm not sure if he starts. I know he's battling Norman Powell for that starting small forward spot. And when we talk about lines, we'll talk about that as well. But, you know, this is a guy who will definitely add three-point shooting to a team that desperately needs it.
Yeah, he's a good fit with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. Like you guys mentioned, the spacing is something. When you have guys that like to drive to the rim and get inside the paint, they need somebody to kick it to in the corner. CJ Miles can be that guy. Like you mentioned, Corey, he is a little bit streaky. I know FanDuel-wise, I pick him up sometimes. He give me, you know, under 10 points. In other games, he might hit, like you said, 4 or 5 threes. So kind of something to keep an eye on. But definitely spacing is important for that team. They didn't really sign anybody else. They picked up some G League guys, nothing, you know, very substantial. But let's talk departures. Like you mentioned, Matt, they lost a Damari Carroll. They lost a Corey Joseph, a Patrick Patterson, and a P.J. Tucker. Let's start with Damari Carroll. Like you guys mentioned, he was terrible in, you know, Toronto, never really healthy. And they had to give up a first and second round pick to unload his contract. What are your thoughts on that? And they picked up Justin Hamilton, even though it's only – they stretched him. It's only a mil, I think, for 3 years. It's still something.
Yeah, I disagreed with the principle of the Damari Carroll trade. It was obviously a move to get Toronto under the luxury tax threshold. They immediately waived Justin Hamilton after the trade, and then he went on to sign in China. Just to me, Toronto is the fourth biggest TV market in the NBA, according to Nielsen. They're ahead of Boston, they're ahead of Houston, ahead of the Bay Area, all of whom are willing to pay into the luxury tax because their teams are competitive. The Raptors are insanely popular right now. They've been at the top of the Eastern Conference for a few years, and they have deep pockets. They're owned by Maple Leaf Gardens Corporation that owns the Maple Leafs. So to give up both draft picks for next summer, just to save a little bit of money, I thought that was not the right decision. I mean, these Raptors fans have been incredibly supportive the last couple of years. This is the highest point where the Raptors have been. And I just thought, on principle, the ownership should have not made this kind of move. I mean, unless they were able to keep their first and second round pick. I just disagreed with the principle of the move. And that's aside from Carroll as a player.
I think the only reason they had to make the move, though, was so they had enough space so they were able to make the trade for CJ Miles. I don't think it was all salary. Like, obviously, they wanted to dump the salary to get under, but I think they also needed to make the move to be able to make the trade for CJ Miles. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I felt like it was a steal for the Nets. I was pretty happy about it.
I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely painful having to send two draft picks with Damari Carroll. like you just mentioned, you guys just mentioned, you know, they needed to, I'm pretty sure, Nick, you're right, that they needed to loosen up some cap in order to bring in CJ Miles in that sign and trade. And then obviously, of course, they signed Ibaka and Lowry to those huge deals. I think it was more of a money thing, and they really just needed to get this contract off the books. And it was just the fact where, like, the tenure of Carroll on the Raptors was just not good for anyone.
And after he left, he didn't have nice things to say about Toronto. He said, you know, Lowry and DeRozan don't trust anybody and that there's too much iso ball and not enough ball movement. But that's for another day. Corey Joseph, they sent to Indiana. What are your thoughts on losing him?
Yeah, I mean, you never want to give up someone from the graduate school of Greg Popovich basketball. But, you know, that's what happens. Sometimes you lose good players like Joseph. He's a professional backup point guard. He's the kind of person that I think, if you want a competitive team that's going to go deep into the playoffs, you want someone like Corey Joseph to be running your second offense. And Joseph was at 25 minutes per game last year, which is a huge chunk. And I do believe in DeLon Wright. I am a believer in him, but I'm not entirely sure that he's ready to take on that kind of workload. And the Raptors would be really smart to manage Kyle Lowry's minutes. So Corey Joseph will be a big loss for them, I think.
I get a ring and I bring it back like Corey Joe. There's the first Drake reference on the podcast. You know, I'm happy because, you know, the Pacers got Corey Joseph, who, like you just mentioned, Matt, you know, you just made me feel really good about losing CJ Miles with Corey Joseph. He's a fantastic backup point guard. Still very young. He's only 25 years old. And obviously when Lowry went down and missed time last year, Corey Joseph stepped up and played another big role within that, you know, team. They're definitely going to miss Corey Joseph just for the fact that, you know, that it's a backup point guard. You know, the point guard position, like what we say in the NBA, is so important. And say Lowry gets hurt, you don't have a veteran point guard coming in to run the offense. You have to, like, you rely on Delian Wright. And how, if he can run an offense by himself if Lowry gets hurt, you know, it raises more question marks if you're losing a guy like Corey Joseph.
Yeah, definitely. And like you guys said, a backup point guard to have around, especially with Lowry's injury history. I mean, the only thing I could think of is I know they've been talking about using DeMar DeRozan more as the primary ball handler. So maybe they're going to stagger Lowry and DeRozan's minutes a little bit more. But let's talk Patrick Patterson. I thought this deal was great for OKC. And I actually was doing some research for the pod. And I also read something that, you know, Patrick Patterson, the Raptors didn't necessarily have a great relationship.
Well, Patrick Patterson is one of my favorite role players in the NBA. I watch a lot of Atlantic Division basketball, and you will not find a bigger Patrick Patterson lover than me. I think he's incredibly versatile, plays the four and the five on offense, defends three fours and fives on defense, shoots the ball at 37% on four attempts per game. And like you said, Nick, such a bargain, 3 years, $16 million. I think I would much rather have that contract than Ibaka's contract and use the leftover money to re-sign PJ Tucker, maybe go after someone like Danilo Gallinari, who would have been really good to space the floor for Toronto. I just love Patrick Patterson's game. He does all the dirty work for you. The Raptors gave up 102 points per 100 possessions with Patterson on the floor, 107 without him, which would have been 18th overall in the NBA. I just think they're going to miss a lot of what Patrick Patterson brings.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, from his time when he played with John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins in Kentucky, you know, I followed Patrick Patterson. He was one of the first guys I can remember being one of those kind of stretch forward guys who would shoot the three. You know, he was kind of doing it right before everyone else, you know, started doing it, you know, across the entire league. You know, for OKC, it was a sweet deal. You know, it looked like he was going to be the starter out there, and obviously he's going to come off the bench now that they got Melo. I like this. I think Toronto, for sure, you know, they lost two really big role players. I mean, Corey Joseph and Patrick Patterson were essential to that second unit. You know, Patrick Patterson obviously can play some small ball five, can play four. You know, and losing a guy like Patterson, you're going to rely more on Serge Ibaka and more on Valanciunas. And, you know, you have that – this team is going to rely so heavily on rookies this upcoming year and, like, sophomores. It's kind of scary if you're a team that's fighting in the upper teams in the East. But Patterson's definitely going to be missed along with Corey Joseph.
Yeah, like you said, the rookies and sophomores and even third-year players, it's going to be an interesting year. You know, it gives them some upside, but it also gives them, you know, some risk of being bad as well. But like you guys mentioned, Patterson is a great role player to have around. I think he's definitely like one of these guys we mentioned as a great complementary player because he can help you fill so many different roles. So he's a guy I would always want on my team, and I can definitely see a spot for him on, you know, a contending-type team. But, you know, they made the trade for P.J. Tucker last year. Now he's no longer there. He's in Houston. What are your thoughts on that?
I thought P.J. Tucker was an excellent addition at the trade deadline. Someone who, as a 3-and-D player, fits really well into any sort of system. I thought Tucker was the right choice, actually, for Cleveland instead of Kyle Korver, just because Tucker provides a lot of grit, a lot of defensive toughness, and he's an excellent three-point shooter. And he reportedly turned down more money to stay in Toronto and decided to go to Houston instead, which I found pretty interesting. But at 32, Tucker has had a long career playing in the NBA and also overseas, so I can see him taking a few steps back. But just another role player that I think down the stretch in the playoffs, when you need that veteran presence, P.J. Tucker is someone that you'd rather have on your roster.
I think he just, you know, just piggybacking off what you just said, I think he'd rather play with the duo of Chris Paul and James Harden, who don't have a problem sharing the ball. You know, if what Damari Carroll said about, you know, Lowry and DeRozan not trusting anybody, he's going to a team with two guys, you know, the best two players who surely trust their guys around them. They don't care about sharing the rock, even though they get their own points. Yeah, you know, P.J. Tucker, when he was brought in, was labeled the LeBron stopper. He was brought in just to stop LeBron James in the playoffs.
There have been so many people who have been labeled that, and they're just not LeBron's.
Oh, it's hilarious. There's, once a year, every time someone gets moved, a big-time wing defender, it's always, oh, this is the guy. Break LeBron James. P.J. Tucker was not that guy, obviously. You know, like we mentioned, you know, it's funny. All these role players that they lost, you know, it's hard to replace kind of guys who have already paved out their role as role players, and now they're trying to find – their next key role players and a bunch of, you know, misfit rookies who haven't proven themselves yet.
Yeah, definitely be interesting here. And like you guys said, there's no such thing as a LeBron stopper. It's just kind of like a myth.
It's honestly just you try to get a lot of people and you throw different looks at him for a couple minutes and hope he misses some shots. That's or causes some turnovers. That's really like what when people say like, oh, he's a LeBron stopper. I just view it as, you know, someone who's another element to throw at LeBron to give him a different look. But then it takes LeBron one or two possessions to master it like the basketball genius he is.
Yeah, they're just players that can make LeBron's life a little bit more difficult, but eventually he's going to make it work. So, but let's talk starters. You know, not a ton of question marks in the starting lineup, but let's hear what you got.
Yeah, Lowry, DeRozan, I think they start with C.J. Miles at the three, and Norm Powell becomes the full-time three by the end of the season. Ibaka, and then, unfortunately, Valanciunas.
Yeah, I'm rolling with Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan. I think they actually go with Norman Powell to start the season. I think they're going to want the three-point shooting or the consistent three-point shooting of C.J. Miles off the bench. And then I think Ibaka and Valanciunas line it up or finish it off.
I'm going to go with Matt's lineup. I think they start with T.J. Miles. Like you mentioned, Norman Powell could maybe start, you know, later in the season. But I think Miles, you know, making the trade for him, bringing him in, giving them some real much-needed spacing, especially if they're going to play Valanciunas. One thing I think it would be interesting come playoff time, do you think they could maybe go with a small ball lineup and bench Valanciunas?
Yeah, I just – I don't – I mean, yeah, they have to. But I just don't see who that – who's the stretch for – that comes in. Like, it's not Norman Powell. He's 6'4". Like, I know he's versatile, but he's not playing the four. I mean, maybe it's Pascal Siakam, but he's still very young, and I don't know if I necessarily trust him. So, yeah, I mean, I think they have to just because of the things that we talked about before with Valanciunas. But I don't see a natural fit, like a six man that you bring off the bench. You're like, oh, yeah, he's a great stretch four, or you have a three that is a little bit tougher that you can move up to four. Like, I think this team actually lacks pure small forwards. So finding someone who can play bounce back and forth between the three and the four, I want them to play a small ball lineup, but I don't know who it is that fills in.
It'll be C.J. Miles. And I can only say that
at the
confidently.
At the four?
I can only say that confidently because the Pacers did it to him all the time. He played a ton of minutes at the four for the Pacers over the last 2 years.
But that was with Paul George at the three, who's way bigger than Norman Powell.
Correct, but Paul George still never guarded fours. He would only guard threes.
Okay.
Paul George refused to play against fours. It was his pet peeve. But I wouldn't be surprised if they put out a lineup. Not saying that it's ideal, but Lowry, DeRozan, Norman Powell, and then you have C.J. Miles and Ibaka. I'm not saying that's a good lineup on the floor. There's no doubt in my mind that'll be out there.
I think you can get away with that against teams that don't have very good power forwards or someone who's going to, you know, play a small ball four, just hypothetically throwing them out there like a team like the Nets who played Rondé at the four, something like that. But come playoff time, if it's a, you know, a good four, CJ Miles will get abused. But if it's not, you know, they might be able to get away with it, and they'll have some really good spacing with a lineup of Lowry, DeRozan, Powell, Miles, and Ibaka, because Ibaka can still shoot. So,
you know what? I forgot about Ananobi, and if he is the player that people market him to be, and he recovers from the knee injury, he's the kind of person up over 230 pounds, 6'8", wide frame, long, a lot of length. He's someone that I could see filling that role. But as a rookie, I don't want him in, you know, an Eastern Conference semifinal, an Eastern Conference final, in crunch time. I mean, he's got to be unbelievable to do that, and I just don't think it's in the cards for this year.
Exactly. I would have mentioned
he has the shooting, right? I don't even think he has the shooting to play like a consistent minutes at the stretch four position.
I would have mentioned him as well, Matt. Like you said, though, I think, you know, being his rookie season, already being injured, you know, maybe if he wasn't injured, he'd be able to kind of prove them that. But, and like Corey said, you know, not necessarily be able to do much offensively. But I think they could probably get away with it, but you just don't want to play rookie big minutes unless they're, you know, extremely good. But breakout starter for the Raptors next year, who's going to break out? This is a tough one, I think.
Yeah, I mean, whether he's a starter or not, I think Norman Powell is the natural choice for me. Terrence Ross is gone. Corey Joseph is gone. Damari Carroll is gone. The path is completely opened up for Powell, and I think that was intentional. He's become a very solid pick-and-roll player. He's a good finisher with a soft touch around the rim. He's already a pretty good secondary or tertiary ball handler if you want to use him in that way. He knows how to use screens advantageously. So between him, if he can fight off CJ Miles for all those minutes, I think between Powell's athleticism, and his switchability, I really like his potential to break out, whether it's in a starting role or off the bench.
Yeah, I'm going easy with my choice. I'm picking DeRozan. I think there's more he can bring to his game. I mean, obviously I don't know how many more points per game he can average, but I definitely think he can be more efficient. There have been a lot of talks from the guys I follow on Twitter and who, you know, are beat reporters for the Raptors that, you know, he's trying to add a three-point shot to his game. You know, if DeRozan adds even a subpar three-point shot to his game, you know, that is a filthy two-guard in the NBA.
He'll be unstoppable. You know, he'll be unstoppable if that happens.
He drives and gets to the line, and if he develops a three-point shot, I mean – that guy could average probably right around 32 points per game. I wouldn't be shocked if he could. But that's my guy to break out.
Yeah, I think starter-wise, you know, since I don't have Powell starting, I have Miles, I think DeRozan's kind of the only guy that I see really getting better. Like you said, Corey, adding the three-point shot and then, you know, being more of a ball handler, more a pick-and-roll player, you know, he's supposed to get involved a little bit more passing this year. So I think DeRozan is kind of an easy bet too, because he's been a guy, like I mentioned earlier on the pod, that does get better. But breakout bench player for the Raptors next year?
I don't think there is one other than Norman Powell, to be perfectly honest. But I'll make the argument for Pascal Siakam. He was completely thrown into the fire too early last season, started 38 games as a rookie. They realized that that was not the best way to develop him. So he ended up playing in the G League playoffs for the Raptors G League team, and he won MVP of the G League playoffs. He brings a ton of energy, a lot of versatility to his defense, just really multifaceted defender overall. I think he can absorb some of the minutes lost from Valanciunas as they start to wane away from him. He's still someone, Siakam, who is really raw offensively. I don't know quite how that would fit with the team that's looking for more spacing. And then the other thing with him is he's already 22 years old. He's a very old sophomore. So if there's a breakout in him, it'll probably be this season or the next. But overall, I love Siakam's defensive activity.
Yeah, I feel like I'm staring at a bunch of dumpsters and I'm trying to pick the best one to be
Savage.
Yeah, I don't actually think Siakam's going to break out, like I said.
It's just tough. I mean, I didn't put CJ Miles in my starting lineup, so I guess I have myself an easy out, so screw you guys. So I'm going to go with CJ Miles. CJ Miles within this offense is probably, besides Kyle Lowry, the best three-point shooter.
Hands down.
So I think off the bench, he's going to be their sixth man at this point in time. His usage is probably going to go back up. You know, last year it was under 20. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes back up to 22. They're going to rely on this guy to score more than 10 points per game. I wouldn't be surprised if he averages his career high, you know, right around 13 or 14, because they're going to need someone to produce some offense off that bench unit.
Yeah. So I had obviously CJ Miles starting, so I'm going with Norman Powell. That's an easy choice for me. And, you know, Matt hinted at it. You know, they kind of let some of these guys go because they wanted to get Powell more minutes, and he's shown flashes. So I think it could be a really nice season for him. Let's talk wins. What's the best case scenario for the Raptors next season?
Okay, best case scenario. I think if everything falls their way, they could be a top two seed somewhere in the mid-50s win total. I think there are still questions with Boston and Washington and Cleveland. None of those teams are sure things. I don't have Toronto in front of them now, but I think if things fall into place. And the way that happens is that they play a lot similarly the way they played the beginning of last season. They move the ball furiously. DeMar becomes the dazzling playmaker and facilitator that they think he can be. Ibaka proves that he can defend centers on a full-time basis. I still think in a best-case scenario, they can win the Atlantic Division. Norman Powell becomes a third reliable star, takes like an Otto Porter-type jump. I think that's their ceiling.
My best-case scenario is 51-31. That's them being the same team they were from last year with worse players than they have from last year. So that's my best case scenario.
I'm going to go with Matt. I think, you know, mid-50s is a possibility. They'll have surge for the whole season. And a lot of these other Eastern Conference teams are a lot of turnover, where the Raptors have, you know, a lot of the same guys in the starting lineup. Obviously, they have question marks with the bench. But there's going to be so many bad teams in the East. And I think the Raptors in the past have kind of proven they can beat some of these bad teams easily. So I think, like you guys mentioned, DeRozan having another big year and adding to his game. I think Raptors' best case, everybody's healthy, everything works out. These young guys kind of take another step. Like Matt said, maybe a two seed in 54 wins. Worst case scenario, though.
Like 43, 44 wins is worst case scenario for me if everyone stays healthy. I could see Lowry starting to age defensively. It doesn't take well to being moved to a spot-up role. I don't believe that will happen because Lowry's a fantastic spot-up shooter. I could see DeMar not being able to stretch it out to three and not, you know, hitting the ground running with the facilitation role that he's going to take on. Valanciunas becomes undeniably unplayable, not just like unplayable like we know he is. And I think that floor has them closer to Philadelphia in the Atlantic Division than it does to Boston, probably closer to a 7 or 8 seed.
Yeah, my worst case scenario for them is they get, you know, 44, 45 wins. I think even if you fall off in the East, as long as you have one or two All-Stars, you're really not falling off that much in the standings. That's just how bad the East is at this point in time, as we've mentioned on almost every podcast around the Eastern Conference team. But, yeah, I think worst-case scenario, they fall off to, like, a 5 seed at best with, you know, 45, 46 wins.
Yeah, I think worst for me would be 46. And, you know, a lot of bad things could still happen, but they're a talented team. And like you mentioned, and Matt, you mentioned, the East is pretty bad. So I think 5th seed's probably worst case because, you know, you have, you know, Cleveland, Boston, Washington, Milwaukee. I don't know of another team in the East I'm willing to bet can jump them, even if things don't go right.
They're still a fabulous regular season team to me. The question for them is, how do they translate it to the playoffs? Is Dwayne Casey going to be forward thinking enough to get them in situations where he's really maximizing the talent? Because to me, they're still a regular season juggernaut.
Yeah, very true. And that, you know, worst case scenario, we didn't even mention playoffs, is, you know, getting knocked out in the first round, which could be possible if they ended up with a fifth seed matching up with a team like Milwaukee, who did give them a little trouble last year, and they're going to obviously be better. But realistically, what's going to happen for Toronto next year?
I just want to say one more thing, Nick, on the issues with, you know, being a regular season team. You know, last year, Kyle Lowry was in the top, like, five players, I believe, in minutes per game, 37.4. And losing a guy like Corey Joseph, that doesn't really help those numbers to go down anywheres. And like we mentioned, this team is more of a regular season team. I just see the same scenario playing out with a guy like Kyle Lowry burning himself out in the regular season. Yeah. There's no one really
back him up. They should be managing his minutes. I mean, he's on the wrong side of 30 now. He's an undersized guard. But you look at their depth chart with DeLon Wright, I don't know if there's an opportunity really for Lowry to really decrease his minutes.
Yeah, very true. I think that could be, you know, the lack of depth. You think they'd maybe go out and sign a cheap guy, a veteran that could just kind of come in and, you know, even just give him a couple minutes extra off a game that can kind of run the show. And that way you don't necessarily always have to count on a young guy. But that could be an issue. But realistically, what do we expect from the Raptors next year?
I have them at 49 wins, fourth place in the East going into the playoffs. So that's two wins less than last season. I just think the addition of CJ Miles, sorry, Corey, doesn't make up for the losses of Joseph, Patterson, Tucker, and Carroll combined, because I still think Damari Carroll is a rotational piece. And the Raptors, to me, just feel very top-heavy, and I'm just not sure that they can replace the depth that they had last season. I'm not really confident in that. I am really excited to see DeMar DeRozan as the primary facilitator. I think Toronto has realized that DeRozan is their best player. He can be their best playmaker, and that in order for them to move the ball at a rapid pace, they need to get into his hands, because he has so much more length than Kyle Lowry, and Kyle Lowry is a better three-point shooter off the ball. And then my bold actual prediction is, I think DeMar DeRozan wins the scoring title this year. The ball is going to be in his hands. I think the guys who were in front of him last season scoring-wise, Isaiah Thomas, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, guys like that, they will have more mouths to feed in those respective places. So I think this is the season for DeRozan. I know you guys chose him as your breakout starter player. So I have him winning the scoring title, all NBA again. This team is clearly his now.
That's a good hot take. I'll take that every day on Sunday. That's a good take. I wouldn't be surprised, now that you mentioned DeRozan possibly, you know, being the scoring title champ. Like you mentioned, there's so many superstars and all-stars have teamed up this offseason. That's a really good take. I'm rolling with one more win than you did, Matt. I'm saying the Raptors win 49 games. They finish, you know, either the third seed or the fourth seed. They're going to be battling with Washington. I think the Bucks are just, you know, a couple steps down behind those two teams. But, you know, this is a team that's still going to be top heavy, like you mentioned. Doing this podcast, I actually lost more faith in them than I had prior, just because looking at this bench unit, you know, it's a dumpster fire. It's not good. Adding CJ Miles helps, but it doesn't move the meter when you lose, you know, three other key role players. I'm worried about Lowry being able to stay healthy. And, you know, DeRozan usage rate last year was already 34.3%. I don't know how much higher that can get. I mean, if that kid develops a three-point shot, then, I mean, DeRozan, like you said, could be the scoring title champ.
Yeah, I agree with Corey. I like that take, Matt. I think, like you mentioned, the other big names are kind of going to lose some of that. And kind of what we talked about before, Lowry's going to kind of take a step back, and they're going to try to limit his minutes and his role a little bit more. So DeRozan's going to have the keys to the offense. It's going to be a lot on him. And I have them probably around 48 to 50 wins. And, you know, their bench still isn't good, but they're going to get away with it just because of the talent in the Eastern Conference. What do you think is a successful season for the Raptors in terms of the playoffs? An Eastern Conference Finals appearance, you know, pushing that team to seven games. You know, what do you think is considered a successful season for the Raptors next year?
Eastern Conference Finals, to me, if they get past Cleveland or Boston and they can win two playoff series, I think that will be an overall success for them. Given where they are, I think expectations should not be to get that far. I think they're going to have their hands full with the Bucks if they have that same first-round matchup and Jabari's back. So if they can put it all together, I think a successful season for them is, regardless of where they're seated going into the playoffs, making it back to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, anything less than an Eastern Conference Finals appearance is a failure for this team. And that's just because of where they've been at already and where they're at in terms of, you know, Kyle Lowry's age and Ibaka's age, those guys coming off the huge contracts or, you know, getting the huge contracts. You know, if they win, if they get into the finals, you know, it's not happening. But if they get into the finals, that's just like the entire North erupts and they'll probably secede from Canada and become their own, like, island. But, yeah, I think best case for them would be if they made the Eastern Conference Finals. You got to get past the second round.
Yeah, I think that would be success. You know, like you guys said, getting to the second round, I think they'd have to get extremely lucky to go to the finals. Just a million things would have to kind of fall the right way, and it would have to be injuries because they don't have necessarily a deep team. But I think, you know, if they could somehow get lucky and maybe avoid the Cavs and maybe try and avoid Boston, I don't know how that would happen. But, you know, that's kind of what the Raptors are hoping for, because obviously even if they got to the finals, I think the Warriors would make quick work of them.
Yeah, the Warriors are going to make quick work of everyone.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
I mean, Cleveland was the only team that had a chance, and I just thought their offseason, they did not build to beat the Warriors. They just built to continue to be the Cavs.
Pretty much.
For another day.
Yeah, exactly. But let's talk the truth. You know, honestly, had a hard time kind of coming up with the emoji for the Raptors, but I just went with an easy one on this team. I went with the hospital emoji. Just because, you know, Lowry's health is going to be such a big part of this team. If they lose him, like we mentioned, the point guard depth is just not there.
I went with the recycle emoji because this team, to me, is just running the same core back, just recycling the same people over and over. I realize that the scheme is going to be different than it was last year. And they have some young players off the bench that are really promising, some good developmental players that I like. But to me, this is the same core, and they're just running it back another time. And there's nothing wrong with that. As I mentioned before, there's nothing wrong with being competitive, selling out every single game, and giving it a good shot and hoping that Boston or Cleveland falters in some unforeseen way. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, to me, for Toronto.
Cue the villain music. I'm back with another mean emoji. I'm picking the clown. I'm big at the clown. You guys can probably already guess. You know, the Raptors every year, they play fantastic in the regular season. They go into the playoffs with thinking maybe this is the team that can dethrone LeBron. So they're a bunch of clowns. maybe it's a little bit extreme, but, you know, when it comes to the playoffs, the Raptors just aren't as good as they are in the regular season. They never translate over once it hits April.
Especially last season. I think last year there was the most hype, especially they got Ibaka. They got PJ Tucker, the quote-unquote LeBron stopper. And, you know, things were looking pretty good, and maybe the Cavs' defense was pretty bad, and maybe they could get lucky, but that just wasn't the case. And I think, like, the Euro emoji was great too, Matt. You know, they're kind of just recycling it. But I guess, you know, from Toronto perspective, winning 50 games just isn't a bad thing. So I think you just can't really throw out this team, so you just got to keep recycling it until maybe you get lucky or something. It's just a bad time to be in the East with LeBron, and then in the West you got the Warriors. Just a tough time to win in the NBA. But let's talk league pass.
It won't ever get star power. There's never going to be a superstar who goes, I want to go play with DeRozan or Lowry. It's not at this point.
What's the best trade package they could throw out there? What do you think they could do to maybe try to get a good player and they go on the market? What's the best deal you think they could throw?
I mean, they're capped out. So unless someone is going to take Valanciunas' contract, and I had a conversation with a close friend about a Valanciunas for Tristan Thompson swap, which is – it makes things interesting, but I don't see them adding another superstar given their salary cap threshold and where they're trying to be financially, not paying into the luxury tax. So in order to get someone who's, you know, making close to the max, who is a max player, it's going to have to cost more draft picks, and they've already sent their 2018 draft picks to Brooklyn, and then either Valanciunas or Ibaka, who are not the most appetizing contracts, in my opinion.
Well,
there's no deal this team can make because you have to move. The only person who's got like a lot of value at this point is DeRozan, and you're not going to move DeRozan just to get another superstar. Like you said, Matt, the contracts between Ibaka and Valanciunas aren't that appetizing. And then, you know, Kyle Lowry's on the wrong side of 30 with a huge contract as well.
It might be like a trade deadline thing, I think. Like, what if it goes completely south in New Orleans and New Orleans is trying to ship off DeMarcus Cousins?
That's what I was thinking.
Before he becomes a free agent. Then you pay lower than market value for the production that DeMarcus Cousins might give you. And, you know, you ship off a Norman Powell or Siakam, Jakob Poeltl, someone who has some promise still and that you can appease New Orleans for a little bit, but I think maybe that's feasible, I guess.
But the problem with that is probably New Orleans would get a better offer elsewhere.
Yeah.
I think maybe what they probably will try to do at the deadline is maybe add some bench depth. I don't know, maybe trade a future pick or something, but they're going to obviously, if they want to be any type of playoff team, they probably need to add at least another veteran to that bench, maybe a backup point guard. We'll see what happens with DeLon Wright, but let's talk league pass. 1 through 10, what do you got the Raptors?
So this is interesting to me because I don't know how much to buy into the whole, oh, DeMar's going to shoot a lot of threes now and DeMar's going to become a facilitator and we're going to space the floor and move the ball and shift the opposing defense from place to place. Because, you know, that's the narrative that's coming out of the Toronto camp. If that is true, then I think they're very interesting. I would put them at like maybe a 6 or a 7. But if they go back to the old isolation first, you know, your turn for pick and roll, my turn for pick and roll Toronto, I don't really need to see that. That would knock them down a peg for me. So overall, I think they're a good league pass rating team because I love watching DeMar DeRozan. I think he has such a polished offensive game from 15 feet and in, and just his ability to, fake people out and get to the cup at will. That alone, plus a really good playing environment up in Toronto, is enough to get them to like a 5 for me. But if they change their scheme up and they try to go a little bit more modern, then I think they're pretty interesting.
Yeah, Dan, I wanted to be the lowest, so I was hoping you guys were going to go a little bit higher. I'm rolling with 5. I think DeRozan and Lowry, you know, they do enough to make them a little bit interesting. You know, and also, we haven't really much. Ibaka only played like 25 games last year for them. So we really didn't get to see Ibaka become, you know, increased within the offense. So I'm not even sure we saw the best Serge Ibaka last year. We're probably going to, you know, try and work him into the offense more. Because, I mean, as a third option, I think Ibaka would be perfect alongside DeRozan and Lowry. And then Valanciunas as a fourth option makes that team a little bit, you know, more enticing offensively.
Or and Lowry only had. Just doing and I was sorry to interrupt. I was just saying Lowry only had a couple games to mesh with Ibaka in the regular season before they hit the playoffs. So that is pretty meaningful too.
Yeah, they were never really fully healthy together. So that could be a plus for Toronto, you know, seeing a Serge, DeRozan, and Lowry all healthy at the same time, kind of clicking thing. They'll have a full season to work it out. It's a pretty good 3-man combo. For me, league pass-wise, though, I'm going to go with a 6 out of 10 because, like Matt said, you know, maybe they'll change their offense, maybe they won't. They have enough star power with Lowry and DeRozan that you want to check it out, and Ibaka kind of puts up big games sometimes. And FanDuel-wise, they got some guys that you might take a chance on, especially some of the young guys, but, you know, nothing crazy, but not too bad either. You'd watch a Toronto Raptors over what TV show that you like.
All right, so so this is with the caveat that they run the new system that I was talking about before, and they try to become more modern, because if not, then I think they're super boring. So if they run the new system, I would watch it over The Office, which is one of my favorite shows of all time. But the reason is I've seen The Office in every single episode, like at least 7 or 8 times. Like I've rolled through that on Netflix so many times that the excitement that I would get of watching the Raptors try to incorporate a new system with DeMar launching threes is more interesting to me than watching The Office for like the double digit, you know, 10th or 11th time. But I still love The Office a lot. And I would absolutely watch The Office before I ever watched Toronto run the same offense that they've been running.
Wow. That was the first time The Office was mentioned. You mentioned it last time, didn't you, Nick?
Yeah, I mentioned it a long time ago, I think.
Okay.
All right. Well, this is tough for me. I'm out of shows that I don't despise at this point. But I'm gonna pick a weird one. I'm gonna pick Dragon Ball Z.
Damn, Corey, that's terrible. That's terrible.
I haven't watched Dragon Ball Z Super yet. Like, I haven't seen one episode, so caught up or anything. But, you know, at this point in my life, I would rather watch NBA basketball almost over any cartoon anime show there is for the most part. And I'm sure, like, Dragon Ball Z, like, it was badass when I was a kid. I still think it's badass because, like, there's still a little kid in me. But it's just not as interesting to me.
Damn, throw some respect on Dragon Ball Z. I wish Jack was here to help me back this up. I'm kind of disappointed in you. Throwing shade at a lot of shows that I like. But I'm going to go with a show that, like, I think it's funny, but it's not a huge deal to me, and that's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Okay. It's bad acting, but they have some funny scenes. Nothing crazy, but the Raptors aren't a team that I'm going to, you know, flick on every night. I'll watch enough, you know, I watch a lot of Atlantic Division, like Matt mentioned, he does too. You know, every time they play the Nets, I might see him live. I've seen the Raptors play, actually. I might have seen the Raptors play more than any other professional NBA team, not being the Nets.
Interesting.
Because I've seen two playoff games against the Raptors because they faced them when they're in Brooklyn, then right before they were leaving New Jersey. So, and both times the Nets won, just throw it out there.
Before the Lowry DeRozan days, though, that, I don't know how much Toronto you were watching live. That must have been pretty ugly, unless you were watching all the way back in like the McGrady Carter days.
It was when Chris Bosh was really good, and the Nets had Vince Carter, Richard Jefferson, Jason Kidd, and it was like a 30-point blowout.
All right.
It was in a playoff game. And then obviously, you know, in Brooklyn when they had KG and Pierce for that one season together, you know, I was at one of those games. I was at the game when KG did the jersey pop and the fans went crazy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So that was probably the best moment for the Nets in Paul Pierce and KG and the Nets tenure was that Raptor series. But that's for another day. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, thank you, Corey. Thank you, Matt, for hopping on. Great show. And then we're moving on to number 8.
Nick, Corey, it's been real. Catch you guys for the next one.
Just hold on. We're going home.
That was good.